I'm all right. What is your name?
My name is Mandy.
What is my name?
Your name is Charlie.
Oh, and what is this?
This is the Juiciest Bits podcast.
Hey!
Yes.
That's right.
Three for three.
That's right. We're still here. Are you ready to go again?
I am ready to go again. I was nodding, but you cannot.
You cannot see that.
Yeah.
Have another run at the old Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
Theme.
This is our last installment of the Christmas season theme. Mm-hmm.
And maybe this time we'll actually break through to Christmas Day.
Maybe.
I believe it. I believe in us. We can do it. It's like we're trapped in Narnia and it's always Christmas Eve and never Christmas.
Oh.
Pretty sure that's how that one goes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Or we're on like platform 9 3/4 and we're trying to find that sweet spot to break through the wall.
Yeah, we're just running at walls.
We just can't. We're just running at walls continuously. Okay, so this is what I really want to know.
Hmm.
Why are all these Christmas movies obsessed with Christmas Eve? Like, no one cares about Christmas proper.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the lead-up and preparation that we really want. And it's like, so yeah, there's this real problem with arrivals and settledness and living in the moment, which is something I do understand.
Yeah.
But it's still weird, right?
Yeah. Well, and I wonder if, like, Christmas Eve... Everything leading up to Christmas Day is where all the shenanigans and magic happen.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas Day itself is like...
Christmas Day still has drama?
It does, but it's like... I don't know. All of that anticipation isn't there.
Mm.
I think part of what makes Christmas Eve such a, like, a juicy topic for Christmas movies is the anticipation stresses people out. Once Christmas Day is there, it's like, well...
It's like the train's left the station.
Yeah, like
whatever
if I
happens,
didn't
happens.
Get all the presents, well, can't do it now.
Right. And if,
yeah, like, I didn't defrost the turkey, well, I guess we're ordering pizza. Like, but the stress of it all, I think, culminates on Christmas Eve.
Okay. So you think it's because it's, like, unsettled that it's, like, more important?
Yeah, or at least makes for a better
drama.
Conflict in a movie. Yeah.
Mm, okay. Maybe. I'll allow it.
Unless it's about Christmas dinner, which is very dramatic.
Right. Well, this is the thing. There's loads of, like, dramatic pieces that happen on Christmas Day, too. So, like, the Christmas dinner. Usually that's when people see all of their relatives, or that's when they get the gifts and they don't like the gifts.
Yeah.
You know, there's like
kids getting the wrong toy.
Wrong toy, someone getting forgotten, someone getting the, like, you know, thing that should have happened before, but, you know, now they've broken up with someone, you know, it's like all the unspooling of shenanigans.
Yeah. I just maybe feel like I think I'm trying to put words to this.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that in stories depicting Christmas Day shenanigans, people are just more resigned to be like, well, Christmas sucks.
Yeah, like, here it is.
Whereas Christmas Eve, like, if someone finds out they got their kid the wrong toy, well, they're going out and they're trying to find the last one when everybody else is. And, like,
it's
a lot more like, we can still make it better. We can still fix it.
Yeah, and I'm just now thinking of... also the Halloween factor of it all, where it's like, no one cares about All Saints Day.
No.
Except for Catholics, I guess. But, like, you know. Who,
only marginally.
Who, yeah. I don't even think they care about it. But, yeah, like, it's like, Halloween is, like, the portal.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, all the drama, like, that's sort of, like, the most potent or powerful, like, spiritual time, too.
Yeah.
It's like when the portal opens and, like, everything comes rushing through.
The veil is the thinnest.
Yeah. You can see the other side.
Truly.
So maybe that's also what it is.
Maybe.
Where Christmas Eve is like, it's like the Halloween of Christmas.
Yes, it's the Halloween of Christmas. But yeah, I think that's right. Like, it is the time when things can still happen to change the course of...
Uh-huh. It's all in flux.
Yeah, it's sort of the last-ditch effort to change a year.
Right, yeah, that's true. It's not just Christmas itself. It's like a reflection of everything that's happened in the last 12 months.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, unlike... New Year's Eve, which is more of anticipation of the future,
mm-hmm.
or at least looking forward to a countdown, Christmas Eve is more of a wrap up, I think.
Yeah, looking back and then trying to do those tiny things that sort of fix it in the moment.
Yeah. Like, if I just do this one thing, then my life will be great because Christmas will be saved. And
yeah.
Like, and it's not true.
Oh, devastating.
It is devastating, but we all
do it. I just get this one doll for sweet Susie, then she'll love me again.
Or, like, if I just bake one more kind of Christmas cookie, then everyone will have a great Christmas.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, it's just...
Yeah. And the cousins will start speaking to each other again.
Yeah.
They bond over the Nanaimo bars. As everyone does.
Everyone does. They're delicious.
They are delicious and overwhelming at the same time.
That is true.
So, you know, shared sugar comas. Bring people together. So what did we watch for our third and final Christmas themed episode?
Our third and final movie is Tangerine, a Sean Baker film, and it is maybe not everyone's first choice as a Christmas movie, or not top of mind for you, yes, but for many people, no. But it does take place on Christmas Eve,
mm-hmm.
and it does have some very interesting things to say about Christmas.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and it's a notable film because it was shot on 3 iPhone 5Ss, which is nobody was doing when it was made.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's incredible.
It's incredible.
It's an iPhone masterpiece. It's a masterpiece, period.
Truly.
But a masterpiece
really is
with iPhones.
Worth watching. I've taught it before. I've taught it to students who don't know what to do with it, and it's really funny to see their reactions. And I think it's a great movie.
You've heard it here first, folks. Mandy's the expert on Tangerine.
No, I am not.
Foremost academic expert. The voice of our generation on Tangerine, I would say.
But you're the one who wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, so. Because I'm tired of talking about stupid, boring movies that are about Christmas, that are about Santa, and, like, have Christmas in the title. And
yep, that's true.
You know, all those obvious choices that other people do. Who cares? Now we're getting into the real shit.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, this movie makes me believe in love and tenderness and community.
It's such a beautiful movie, especially about friendship, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is a really lovely counterpoint, I feel like, because it is such a different sort of Christmas movie to, like, basically all of the other noise out there. But I feel like it captures something much more sincere than everything, sort of, despite that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't have, like, sort of the same tone of rabid consumption, but there is much more a sense of community care and connection and, you know, sort of the things that are always bandied about at Christmas anyways.
Mm-hmm.
And here look very different and much more life-giving, actually.
Yeah, well, and I would even venture to say that all of these, like, the elements of community care and friendship and goodwill are happening sort of concurrently with, but not because of, Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just happens to be Christmas, but I don't think any of the bonds or community care or relationships that happen in the movie, I don't think any of them are because it's Christmas.
No.
Which is really refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like, oh, let's make up because it's Christmas and it's the season.
It's the thing to do.
Like, you almost don't notice.
And I don't want to go to my family reunion alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, so I was thinking, this might be jumping ahead to our theme corner, but this movie actually positions Christmas behavior as a really, really negative thing.
Yeah.
So all of the reference to Christmas, or when people say, like, oh, it's Christmas, it's uniformly because they're trying to, like, excuse something awful that they've just done.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like, in the context of A Christmas Carol, when, you know, someone says it's Christmas, and that means that that's going to be followed with something like a gesture of goodwill.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a reason to do better than you would normally rather than worse than you do normally and expect the same treatment.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really important point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, what is your history with this movie? How would you say it fits into our Christmas theme?
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, what does it say? How is it in dialogue with Violent Night and A Muppet Christmas Carol? Most importantly.
Okay. So my history with this movie is I've seen it a few times. I have taught it twice. And then recently I taught it a couple of weeks ago in a film theory course about representation theories. And it was really interesting to see how my students received the film, and the conversations we had about it afterwards were so rich and so, I think, so good for all of us to kind of suss out some of these topics.
Hmm.
So that's my history with it. It is a Christmas movie because it takes place on Christmas Eve and Christmas is
boring.
Referenced.
Do better.
There is a Christmas tree and a Christmas dinner.
Ugh.
There is... Oh, I mean, what do you want? The outward signs of Christmas are those things.
All right, fine. All right.
Yeah, but also, as you were saying, it does have some things to say about goodwill versus excuses to be shitty.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. And then what's the last question? How it connects with the other films?
Yeah, how is it in dialogue with Violent Night and The Muppet Christmas Carol?
Okay. Well, it isn't. But, I mean, I think especially with something like Violent Night, Violent Night sort of upends our understanding of Santa Claus and gift giving and goodwill to some extent.
Okay.
And I think this movie does... Two,
mm-hmm.
not only because there's no Santa Claus to be seen, but because the gifts being given are, they're just of a different kind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the biggest gift comes at the end.
Yes.
And we'll talk about it later. But it's so lovely and is not a gift because it's Christmas.
Yeah.
Right? It's a gift because it's friendship.
Yeah.
So I think it, and it does kind of, it does, it's a Christmas movie of a different kind, right? It's takes place in LA. You can't really tell it's Christmas. You can't mm-hmm. just sort of like in Violent Night when everybody's so rich, it's like gifts don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Right. Because you can just go buy whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So it just, it strikes me as a movie that's talking about Christmas without talking about Christmas.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Interesting.
But it doesn't have any Muppets in it, so I don't
know. And no Michael Caine, so
It doesn't have much to do with Muppet Christmas Tricky. Carol, I suggest.
Let me think about this.
I'm not saying it has nothing to do.
Okay, all right. I'll allow it for now,
okay.
But we'll circle back for sure.
We'll circle back. I'm interested in your thoughts.
So I have not taught this movie. I have only seen it a couple of times, but we did also, I feel like, write about it.
Oh, yeah,
we did. A long time ago, we wrote a film review, and mm-hmm. I can't remember anything we said, which is probably for the best.
It was probably brilliant,
but you know what? Better to let it rest in the past and us to only look forward.
Yep. We didn't talk about the Christmassiness of it, probably.
Oh, fools. Fools us. Yeah.
Maybe we did. I don't know.
Unbelievable. yeah, so I have always, like, I think from the first, just, like, loved this movie, and have really felt, like, very, very connected to it.
Mm.
And not to say that any of these experiences mirror my own, because it could not be further from the truth, but, just, I mean, there's already, like, there's so few movies about trans people's experience.
Yeah.
And particularly so few movies where trans people get to be trans people.
Yeah.
You know, from the, like, 7 movies we have of trans people, like, 6 of them are, like, cis people being like, I'm going to have a funny voice.
The Danish girl.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you know, some still are able to make beautiful art out of it, but, mm-hmm. like, Yeah, it is so, it is still so, so rare to see this kind of portrayal so, so sensitively and beautifully and caringly done. Mm-hmm. And such, like, very particular attention to detail is just, like, yeah, very, very soul-affirming for me. Mm. But I think this is the definitive Christmas movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I think we shouldn't even be talking about any other Christmas movies.
Good thing we already did.
Well, just throw them out. Toss them in the garbage. No, I think again, as a trans person who has sort of come through a much more, like, traditional, like, Christmas upbringing, with all of the trappings, and have, you know, now gone through multiple reevaluations of, you know, everything from childhood, Christmas being one of them, I think Christmas is a much more conflicted time for me. So I am also much more drawn to movies that have Christmas sort of in the background, but don't overemphasize, you know, its life-changing qualities.
Right, yeah.
And do show it just as sort of like, oh, another day where things are happening. Mm-hmm. And, yes, no, it's nice in the background and, you know, maybe something special is happening. But also, you know, life goes on and actually it's kind of irrelevant if you are already a terrible person doing terrible things. And really what's important is to, like, yeah, create intentional community and hold your pals, mm-hmm. With care. So that feels, again, very, very resonant to me. And I would say that in connection with Violent Night and A Muppet Christmas Carol.
Did you dig yourself into a corner?
Nope. In no way have I. But I think this is something that we should come back to, uh-huh. For sure.
Okay.
I do like thinking about this as another way of approaching Christmas where there's, like, for Violent Night, like you said, like there's sort of like the extravagant trappings of Christmas, but it also is like kind of irrelevant to their life. Like, yeah. They're so wealthy, it doesn't even really matter what time of year it is. Mm-hmm. It's like just sort of like, you know, rebranding the same old stuff. And I feel like also with A Muppet Christmas Carol, there is this sort of sheen of, like, we're repackaging something that's already been presented to you. So there are these also, like, layers of remove from a story. Maybe what I'm trying to say is that these all feel like very mediated ways of getting at Christmas and experiencing Christmas. Mm-hmm. So, there is, yeah, all of these stories have sort of a level of remove that you have to sort of, like, get through in order to reach sort of, like, the standard Christmas experience that is sort of packaged at us.
Yeah, that makes sense. And even thinking about it a little more, like, Muppet Christmas Carol literally has puppets as stand-ins for people. Like, puppets are giving us lessons in morality.
Yeah. See, there it is. We got
there.
We
did it.
I knew it.
Ha ha.
I knew they had something to say to each other. We just had to dig deep enough.
We definitely planned it.
Okay. All right. So, your favorite segment and mine.
Mm-hmm.
Describe this movie in 4 keywords or less.
Okay. So, family.
Mm-hmm.
Walking.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Deadbeats.
Oh. Yeah.
And kidnapping.
Whoa! Okay. Kidnapping. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, great. All right. So
it happens in the movie.
I had a moment where I was like, when are they kidnapped?
They are not kidnapped.
No, it's true. Yeah. no, but I'm with you now. Okay, so mine were donuts.
Oh, yes.
Drama.
Mm-hmm.
Walking.
Perfect.
So much walking.
They walk across Los Angeles.
They do. Twice.
Yeah, yeah.
And wigs.
I almost did wigs.
Oh my god, why didn't you?
Because I decided on kidnapping instead.
Well, kidnapping was good too. Oh, yeah, I agree. I allow it. may I do a summary?
Please.
Perfect. So, it is Christmas Eve. And we know this because there's diegetic old-timey music playing. And then we hear a voice saying, Merry Christmas, bitch. While a pair of hands pushes the teeniest little donut across the table towards another pair of hands. We're in donut time. A store in LA that was real, but is not anymore, because Danny Trejo is a businessman and purchased it.
What?
And rebranded it.
What?
So that store is now called Trejo's Coffee and Donuts. Look it up. It's amazing.
Get out of town.
Yes. Danny Trejo. Look it up right now.
Wow.
Look it up right now.
All
right. The branding is incredible.
Danny Trejo.
It's Danny Trejo's face.
Great.
I love it so much. It's a beautiful vision. for the listeners, Mandy is in fact looking it up on her phone, like I told her.
It's straight up is his face.
It's straight up
his face. And all it does is remind me of when in Breaking Bad his severed head is put on a turtle. And it's walking around the desert.
But wouldn't you want that on a coffee cup?
I mean, I do now.
Yes.
Now I have a place I need to go next time I'm in LA.
Oh my god. It is a serious destination location. So we see our girls, Alexandra and Cindy, catching up for a quick chat after Cindy's 28-day stint in prison. Cindy just got out and is ready to spill the beans to Alexandra about the sitch with her boyfriend slash pimp, Chester. Alexandra assumes that Cindy's news is about dumping Chester, not about reconnecting, and being a very supportive friend, she preemptively is like, phew girl, finally, he was cheating on you all over the place while you were away, 100% good dodge, he is trash. And this is definitely not where Cindy had expected the conversation to go. As we'll find out later, Chester had proposed to her in part to manipulate her into going to jail for him. So she was all ready to be like, I'm getting married. Want to help me plan my trousseau? But now she has to track down that philandering no good so-and-so and the hussy he was boating to give them all a what for. Alexandra's like, whoopsie, gotta do damage control now. So she goes with Cindy, telling her to not create drama or else. We then follow Cindy and Alexandra as they walk around town, encountering friends and harassing acquaintances. An assortment of, you know, random white boys and then, you know, other trans people, other sex workers. As they piece together the clues of who Chester was boning, turns out it was a white cis woman with a name that starts with D, and track her down. Intercut with all of this, we see short scenes of Razmik, an Armenian cab driver, as he is driving different fares around town. Some sad, some okay, and some genuinely horrifying. There is a vomit scene that, like, I can't even think about. Yeah, it is beyond. Gross. It is disgusting.
Yeah.
At some point, Alexandra gets fed up with the drama. Cindy can't stop the drama, even if her life depended on it. So Alexandra goes off to continue handing out flyers for her evening concert event and to meet up with a John. The John is terrible, it turns out. Big surprise from someone who claims he needs to just get off to deal with his family at Christmas. and he refuses to pay her when he can't get hard. It's like, that's like fully not her fault. That is 100% you. And your stupid dick. Alexandra does what she can to try and force him to give her what she's owed, but then they run into a cop. Bad news. Cop dead names and misgenders her, and then magnanimously says she'll let both Alexandra and the John go this once because it's Christmas. So essentially, like, you know, letting the John off the hook and and also, like, forcing Alexandra to go off without her pay. Meanwhile, Cindy has tracked down Danielle, Dana, Dinah, Turns out she's working at a scuzzy motel room that is packed with other sex workers and John's all hooking up. and she drags her out by her hair, forcing her to trek back across the city to find the elusive Chester.
In flip-flops.
In one half of flip-flops.
A flip-flop.
A single flop.
It seems terrible.
Seems truly terrible. Alexandra then meets up with Razmik, and he goes down on her in a car wash, which, if nothing else, is very efficient and admirably multitasking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This scene isn't erotic. Like, nothing in this movie is erotic. Mm-hmm. All the sex is, like, super business-like and transactional, obviously. But it did make me think that car washes are a little bit sexy.
Yes, yeah. I have something to say about that.
Later. Do you?
Yeah.
Is it about how car washes are basically orifices?
Partly.
Okay, well, let's not spoil it. Okay. Alexandra then goes to the bar where she's paid the manager to let her sing a set on stage. And no one shows up to her event until Cindy appears, still literally hauling Dinah around to support Alexandra, at least for the first song. And then she and Dinah go to the washroom and smoke meth. Mandy, I just want you to know. If you were singing on stage, I would listen to at least two songs.
Thank you.
Before bailing. At least two.
That's all I would ever ask of you.
After the set is done, all three women head back to donut time for the final showdown. Chester is there, and when Cindy walks in, he acts like nothing is wrong. Asking her where she's been all day, saying he's been looking for her. It's all bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Then Cindy hauls in Dinah and demands to know what the fuck. And then Razmik shows up looking for Cindy. And then Razmik's mother-in-law shows up looking for Razmik. And then Razmik's wife and baby show up looking for him too. And the scene is like a symphony that keeps building.
Oh, it's so awkward.
It's so awkward and amazing.
Yeah.
There's so much chaos and everyone is having their own private argument that then becomes somehow part of the larger argument. And then, like, ebbs and flows back into smaller arguments while other ones take over. Ugh. Actually, are you familiar with Steve Reich?
Not really.
Okay. So he's a minimalist composer who has created music out of, like, segments that repeat over and over again. Like a canon, but at different speeds, so they often fall out of sync with each other.
Ooh.
And then they will end up pairing at, like, unexpected moments. So it's called phrasing. And that's what this scene feels like to me, where it's like each character is an instrument that keeps repeating their argument, but at like different volumes and pacing and intensity.
I love that.
And like, that's interesting itself, but then like how it gets woven into the larger collective argument of.
Yes. Know. And in front of the poor donut time employee, who is their audience.
Who is just, yes, exactly. Yeah. An unwilling audience.
And who hates them all.
She just keeps trying to get them to leave and they won't.
Or to buy something and they won't.
Or to buy it and then they won't. Eventually, everyone gets kicked out of donut time. Razmik and his family go home. And Alexandra, Cindy, and Dinah and Chester have a much quieter showdown in front of the restaurant. And at that point, Chester reveals that Alexandra also had sex with him. And this is one betrayal too many for Cindy. Pretty defeated. Cindy walks off, like, subdued for the first time in the movie. And Alexandra again follows, trying to explain her side of things. Cindy keeps rebuffing her, though, and says she just wants to do one last job and then go home for the night. When a car full of men roll up, she approaches and they toss a cup of urine in her face and drive off, yelling transphobic and homophobic slurs, and it's so, so terrible. Alexandra runs up to her, takes her to the nearby laundromat to clean her clothes, and in the most beautiful final moment, it's so very quiet and full of care after all the noise that's gone on before, Alexandra gives Cindy her wig to wear, and that's the end. Oh, it's so, so beautiful. All right. Oh,
well done.
So, you've taught this. Tell us what... Teach us. Teach us.
Don't make me. I've had a long day.
No, but I'm curious. What are sort of like main things that you pull out when you're talking about this with youths? Often youths who have like never encountered trans people before or are walking in, you know, unaware of like the many complex issues that are presented in this movie.
Yeah, so we talk about, I mean, I teach this for representation because it's outside the norm of what gets taught for representation mm-hmm. a lot of the time. But we talk about issues of place, so Los Angeles, mm-hmm. race and issues of place, the work of sex work and mm-hmm. how it's typically not seen as actual work, even though it is.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, sexuality, gender, transness, mm-hmm. as you know, as much as I can talk about those things. And immigration is another one. We talk about Razmik's family, especially being from Armenia, and they talk a lot about how they're having an American-style Christmas, and it's all big and ostentatious. And my students are often very surprised to learn that Armenia has like a 97% Christian population.
Oh yeah.
So, because they're like, oh, what religion would they be? And it's like very likely Christian. Yeah. But that just kind of goes to show how different Christmas is in America, where everything is just mm-hmm. larger than life.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of try to talk about every aspect. We talk a lot about the filmmaking too. But I'm particularly interested in the locations, the points of contact. So Donut Time and the bar where Alexandra sings, and Razmik's car and Razmik's home, and sort of these points of intersection,
mm-hmm.
the car wash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I did actually, so I gave my intro film studies class final exam today,
mm-hmm.
and part of the exam is an image analysis, and I used a still from this movie because I was banking on the idea that none of them had seen it, and I was right. So I used the still of Alexandra sitting there having given Cindy her wig.
Yeah.
And Cindy's, you know, head in her hands looking really sad, and Alexandra's smiling. And it was so interesting seeing their responses to this photo, because most of them were just like, this is a beautiful photo. This is so so indicative of friendship and a strong relationship, and these women are so close. And I didn't know what to expect. I just kind of like to mix it up. So, but yeah, it was really interesting to kind of even just see which ones would engage the most on everything they saw in that still.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anything pop out that was surprising, or maybe any observations that really stuck out to you?
So I teach at a Christian university college, and a lot of the students come from pretty conservative backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
I am not conservative at all. So I tend to be the one who teaches the stuff no one else will teach.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud to do it. So I was sort of anticipating a lot of students really not knowing what to do, or even feeling really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very pleasantly surprised by how many were just very conscientious and very thoughtful in their in their description and analysis of the still.
Mm. That's great.
Yeah.
Kids are all right.
Yeah. Just like, I need to give them more credit.
Oh, man. Well, okay. That's great. That's really lovely. I don't really have anything to say about sex work in particular, but like just the fact that I just want to circle back to what you had said about the nature of it being actual work, like intense labor, and
mm-hmm.
and how this movie shows it's also just never ending, like you never have time off.
No.
It is like you're always like fighting to get more, or fighting to get your due, or
well also like fighting to stay safe.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a constant hustle.
Mm-hmm. And they say that at one point. There's, like all we have is the hustle.
Mm-hmm.
And you just have to keep moving. Because otherwise you're not going to get shit. And that really struck me again on this watch. It's just, they are essentially working, like 20-hour days.
Yeah.
Like, well, there is no downtime.
I think it's really, really important that we never see them go home.
Yeah.
We never see where they live. We see Cindy having come straight from jail.
Yeah.
And now she's walking across Hollywood, mm-hmm. and Alexandra's just there. And then at the end, it seems like, yeah, they've gone a whole day without stopping, without going home. Meanwhile, Razmik, who is a cab driver, notoriously long hours, mm-hmm. has the chance to go home and have a
beautiful ass dinner.
Yeah, dinner with his family, get upset with his family, leave to go
storm
see.
Off.
Yeah. Like it's showing the sort of hierarchy of society.
Yeah.
I think in that way, where Razmik, the immigrant cab driver, gets more time off than these women.
Yeah. And has safe spaces and has,
has the whole
space,
like,
he can control.
Family, like wife and child and mother-in-law and
many old ladies.
Many other old ladies who are
of
dubious relationship. But yeah, like his family looks more like the typical American Christmas mm-hmm. than Alexandra and Cindy's mm-hmm. family does.
Yeah, and we know that they have a place to live because, mm-hmm. like, in the opening, Alexandra, that's sort of the trade-off. Alexandra said, oh, I actually covered your rent, and I sort of, like, lost my phone because I put that money towards your rent while you were away.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, covering my phone bill.
Which also is telling about how much money she makes.
Yeah. Oh, well, and, like, even we see, like, over the course of this day, like she goes to meet that one John, and she's like, okay, $80 for this service, mm-hmm. and he's like, I've got 40.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, well, then we're changing the service, and you better come fast, and even that doesn't work out, and then he takes the money back. So it's like, like, all of this for nothing.
Just complete disrespect.
It's so fucked. Yeah.
And I think it's really important, too, that we see... So at one point, Razmik stops and has the sex worker get into his car, and he asks for a service and finds out that the sex worker is cis.
Yeah.
And just freaks out and kicks her out of his car. And she doesn't know, like, what's happening or why.
Yeah.
And it just... It's even, you know, Razmik is treating a sex worker he doesn't want as if she is not even human.
Mm-hmm. He's already like pulled down her underwear mm-hmm. and like grabbed at her and then been like, oh wait, no.
Yeah.
Actually, no.
And he's like, you can see his own anger and embarrassment, but it's like, why are you mad and embarrassed?
Yeah.
Like, you were just feeling around in someone's underwear and you didn't find what you wanted to. So, and then you yelled at them.
Yeah.
Like, that's, what's that going to do?
While also controlling this, like, this is your space, this is your cab, this is, like...
the power dynamic.
You literally have all of the control in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even the way he kind of uses Alexandra to get to Cindy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if he can't have Cindy, Alexandra's a second
best option.
And he's fine with her knowing that.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I feel so much for Alexandra throughout this movie, because she's a good friend.
She's like the moral center of this whole movie.
Yeah. And nobody shows up for her.
Yeah.
And like, yes, she has sex with Chester. But she didn't think.
It also isn't clear to me how much that was coerced or how much that was just like part of the job also.
Well, that's exactly, and like, it, because Chester,
there's so many layers of that.
Chester's a pimp, and also mm-hmm. as far as she thought, she and Cindy and Chester were broken up. So she was not she was acting in good faith, mm-hmm. but she's the one who has to clean up all the messes all the
from
time.
Everyone else. Yeah.
And nobody even comes to her show.
Oh, that just, like, destroyed me.
I'm so sad.
Yeah.
And it's not like it was a good show, but...
But you do things for pals, you know?
Well, and, I mean, finding out, too, that she had to pay mm-hmm. to do it.
Yeah.
And that's also where her money goes, right? Is trying to do this other thing and become a singer. Mm-hmm. And just to have Dinah particularly just, like... mock her mercilessly. for that.
Dinah can go fuck a cactus.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, Dinah is... I think Dinah is a fascinating character.
Do tell!
Because she is not so... Dinah is a blonde cis woman
mm-hmm.
who is basically wearing, like, pajama pants or pajama shorts and flip-flops
mm-hmm.
and a tank top, and she's being dragged around Hollywood by her hair,
mm-hmm.
by Cindy.
And emaciated to the point of, like...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, physically, she looks like you could snap her with your fingers.
Yeah, and she's not... classically beautiful. She's not, I mean, Cindy and Alexandra are far more beautiful
yeah.
than she is, but she is lording the fact that she has a vagina over uh-huh. them, basically. Like, she knows the capital
mm-hmm.
that can bring or not bring. And so she acts superior
mm-hmm.
to Cindy and Alexandra, even though she works in a hotel room brothel.
Yeah.
And we kind of see her get her comeuppance at the end where, you know, she goes back to the brothel and she's been replaced and she has to sit outside. She has nowhere to go. And...
Yeah. That scene also breaks my heart.
Yeah! Like, this movie makes you hate somebody and then feel bad for them in the next scene. Like, it's just... It really messes with you in the best possible way.
I think the thing that this movie succeeds over and over again at is showing, like, the shades of vulnerability and resilience and like, yeah, all everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
And from people you don't necessarily expect, like Dinah, who's just, like, so annoying mm-hmm. most of the time. And she says things, and you're like, oh, bitch, just shut up.
Yeah.
Go away. Please be quiet. And, like, when she's criticizing Alexandra's singing, she's like, yeah, so I myself am a singer. I know people in the music industry. And it's like, bitch, you do not. That was
so funny.
You do not.
Yeah.
You don't have a leg to stand on. Please be quiet. But, like,
totally.
But then... You see, like, as soon as she's sort of, like, with Chester and, like, trying to, like, gain power that way, and then is, like, he just, like, dismisses her out of hand,
mm-hmm.
And she has to walk back alone, and then is, like, once she gets back to the motel, finds out she's been done out of a job.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's so... I mean, there are kind of waves of friendship, kind of...
Mm-hmm.
coming up between her and Cindy. Like, they hate each other, but then they smoke meth together in the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
and then they're making jokes together,
mm-hmm.
and they're getting drunk together in the booth yeah. while Alexandra's singing, and they sort of have these kind of seeds of a friendship
yeah.
building, right? The only thing that's coming between them is a man, really.
Well, and also Dinah is, like, transphobia, so...
And yeah. Dinah's... Yeah, yeah, and Dinah's the worst, but, like, as she spends time with Cindy,
mm-hmm.
she kind of... I don't know. She kind of goes in waves, right? Like, it seems like mm-hmm. they're maybe starting to be okay with each other,
mm-hmm.
and then Dinah will say something terrible,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, more yeah. hair-walking, and... But it's like, okay, what is this movie saying about friendships among women, too?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
how... Because at the end of the day, they're all, like, Chester's the one who's against, like, they're all against Chester.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of see him as a common enemy. More so, I think, than they see each other as enemies.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's push that a little bit further. What do you think this movie is trying to say about friendship? Because I think there are really interesting, yeah, ebbs and flows is a really good way of saying it.
Yeah.
Like, Cindy, like, Alexandra leaving Cindy and them sort of, like, storming off, and then Cindy still putting her agenda on hold to go and show up at the concert, and then only sitting through one song to then go smoke meth. Like, you know, so there's this yeah. is, like, I'm showing up for you, now I'm, like, bailing. I'm showing up for you, and I'm bailing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's...
I'm yeah. late, I'm leaving early.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh, I mean, I keep coming back to Alexandra as the moral center and the sort of
mm-hmm.
friend, you know, the one who is yeah. who is sort of the model of friendship, right? She's there as soon as Cindy gets out of jail, she covers her rent. She, you know, mm-hmm. all she asks in return is that Cindy show up for her. And she even puts her day on hold to go find Chester with Cindy until she's like, I can't.
Yeah.
Like, you're being unreasonable.
This is too much. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we see instances of Alexandra and Cindy sort of parting ways because Alexandra is kind of standing up for herself
mm-hmm.
a little bit. And Cindy doesn't understand that.
Yeah.
Because Alexandra, I mean, they both care very much about dignity, but in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cindy sees her relationship with Chester as her source of dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And Alexandra sees herself mm-hmm. as her source of dignity. And so she wants to go after something that will make her life better
mm-hmm.
or richer. So she goes to sing. But I even wonder, I mean, she seems to know that Cindy isn't reliable as
yeah.
a friend. Like
yeah.
Cindy has this bee in her bonnet about Chester mm-hmm. and yeah, shows up late. Alexandra almost has to forfeit her stage time because no one shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, you know, trying to think of what that would feel like, knowing that you're closest friend is not reliable. Like, that's, it's
not someone you can depend on to show up. Yeah.
Yeah, because Cindy just kind of, I think especially at the beginning, just assumes that Alexandra will just clean up after her.
Yeah.
And so when she finds out that Alexandra and Chester slept together, regardless of the context,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, her world melts down because she's like, well, great, I'm all by myself now.
Yeah.
Even though she doesn't take the time to talk to Alexandra about it or hear her out, even though she would expect that from
mm-hmm.
Alexandra. And then, yeah, at the end, Alexandra giving her own wig to Cindy,
mm-hmm.
whose wig is in the wash, I guess, or ruined.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, it's just the most special gift
mm-hmm.
because it is, it's Alexandra literally giving a piece of herself
yeah.
to her friend, a very tangible piece of herself. And this is after Cindy's walked away from her. And, ugh, I feel like I'm tearing up talking.
Yeah.
About it. but it's like she recognizes that Cindy's rock bottom
yeah.
is here. Yeah, so she's just such a good friend, and I could talk all day about what a good friend Alexandra is, and I think, you know, we could all do better to live up to Alexandra's example.
Follow the example of Alexandra.
Yeah. Because she's also enough of a good friend to tell Cindy when she's being crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that it probably won't do anything.
Oh, yeah, like a boundary queen who's like, no, if you bring in the drama, I gotta leave. Mm-hmm. And Cindy brings in the drama, and she's like, I gotta leave.
Yeah, like, dialed up to 10 from the get-go.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, welcome back from jail. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think she feels responsible for Cindy, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she really strikes me as sort of an older sister type. And I'm not just saying that because I'm an older
I was going
to
say, is
like,
are you feeling?
It's like, okay, listen, I've been where you are. I know.
Mm-hmm.
I know the tendency to feel this way. Or, like, it's like she's anticipating
mm-hmm.
what Cindy's reactions and mm-hmm. sort of planning her life accordingly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There also feels like, yeah, a bit of, like, a trans mother vibe to her, where she's like further along in her transition, even like she talks about having estrogen kicking in, and you know, like she's just like much more settled and confident in her body
mm-hmm.
and so I think that dynamic also plays a big part of it in having Alexandra sort of be further along in her gender identity journey and sort of looking back and seeing Cindy maybe like more starting out, or, you know, doesn't have access to hormones or whatever. Mm. And, you know, seeing, like, you know, I don't want to call her a trans elder because she's definitely not, but like, but you know, like there is that sense from someone who is further along in their transition experience, looking back to someone who's starting out and being like, oh yeah, I see the chaos that you're in right yeah. now. I see where, like, you know, whatever choices you're making, you're still in the midst of them. And there's a lot more, maybe, you know, acting out, because you're still trying to figure out the confines of yourself and your body in the world.
Yeah.
And I think I also this time read that much more as sort of like an act of grace on Alexandra's mm-hmm. part in reaching out to Cindy and being like, yeah, no, like you are on this journey as well. Mm-hmm. And I have the capacity as someone who has sort of like more fully settled within myself, I have the capacity to extend that to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I just realized too that Cindy is a month behind mm-hmm. where she would have been before she went to jail too.
Yeah.
In terms of transition, like she wouldn't have gotten any hormones in jail or,
yeah.
or proper medical care.
No.
So it's like she was confined for so long. And I mean, she's still confined in a way. She's confined in her relationship with Chester.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just trying to... Oh, I hate that I'm going to say this, but she's just trying to be free.
Oh, get out. Like, show yourself to the door. Boo!
But I agree with you. Like, she's trying to assert who she is after not having been able to,
mm-hmm.
you know, because probably too,
let alone whatever like fucked up shit happened in prison.
Oh yeah, because you know she wasn't put in a women's prison.
Oh no.
So it's just like, okay, there's some trauma there that we don't know about specifically, but mm-hmm. yeah, she's stunted a little bit, and Alexandra is, yeah, I think shows her a lot of grace.
I wouldn't say stunted. I think I saw it as yeah, like a bid for, like this. These are all just ways of trying to find home,
yeah.
you know. And so you're trying to find home in people that maybe aren't the most reliable, and trying to find home in situations that aren't maybe safe, right. And. You know what, like, a lot of it feels like trial and error, like, until you do find the people that are safe and the situations that are home, especially when you have so few options available to you.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it feels much more like, yeah, like, sort of, like, leaning on things to see if they can support your weight.
Mm-hmm. Which makes so much sense, given that part of her job, too, is literally leaning into cars
mm-hmm.
that can drive away or throw pee at her
mm-hmm.
at any moment. Like, she deals in transient people.
Mm-hmm.
That is her whole job. So, to have...
And the balance of sort of, like, holding yourself... separate, but then also sort of like, you know, not embracing the danger, but like sort of like opening yourself up to potentially dangerous mm-hmm. situations.
It's just part of the job.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I really like that way of thinking about it.
Yeah. What else did you have to talk about with Tangerine?
Well, I think we should talk about Resmik.
Okay.
And his family.
Yeah. And...
Because I'm just really fascinated with his sort of sneaky sex worker dalliances and his, like, what are we meant to feel about Resmik when we find out that he has, you know, a beautiful wife, a beautiful child, mm-hmm. a house full of people, mm-hmm. Christmas dinner, and he's just absent, even though he's there in body, you know, he does not want to be there. It's very clear that he doesn't want to be there. And especially when he hears that Cindy's out of jail,
mm-hmm.
he drops everything
Yeah.
Right? Even though he, I mean, she's clearly his sort of go-to favorite, but it's not like they're going to have a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm curious what you think the point of Razmik is.
I think that's also part of the journey of the film, because for so much of this runtime, it is like Alexandra and Cindy's story, and it's clear, like, you know, the path that they're on, what they're doing, and just like the little flashes of scenes with Razmik interspersing that at odd intervals is very not discombobulating, but like disorienting. Because you're like, what? How does he fit in? What's going on there?
Yeah.
Like, we don't see any point of connection until like halfway or maybe 2/3 of the way through, when Alexandra and him hook up,
mm-hmm.
and it's clear that Alexandra knows him, and then he's like, oh, and how's Cindy? Like, so there's like, oh, okay, now we see the history sort of spreading out behind us.
Yeah.
So I think the movie itself also fosters that little bit of like out of placeness for him. I feel like this movie deals in like isolation and alienation, and he is sort of like the counterpoint to this relationship that Alexandra and Cindy have, where they have context of each other and have a level of care of each other, or at least Alexandra does for Cindy. But it's somewhat reciprocated for Cindy to Alexandra too.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that's also what makes the betrayal at the end sting so much, is that there had felt like this unspoken, like, you know, beyond this point, do not pass.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sure enough, something happened. But I think, like, even in scenes where Razmik is in a crowd, like, when he is at home, he also looks out of place.
Yeah.
Like, he is the only man at a table full of women.
Yes.
And they sort of, like, look to him as the one who's going to pour the cognac, but, like, not join in the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So even his role there is almost perfunctory.
Yeah, he's the breadwinner.
Yeah. So they're like, okay, come in, sit down, whatever, sit in the corner, you're fine, whatever. And to the point where, like, yeah, when he does leave, they're like, oh, what's he doing now? But it also kind of doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So just thinking about how he doesn't really have a place, even though he's, like, of a family of immigrants, they're all ostensibly sort of, like, in this same scenario of, like, you know, this newcomer precarity.
Mm-hmm.
He is even more isolated than that.
Yeah.
And he's further isolated by the fact that he's in a cab by himself, sort of like encountering this constant rotation of strangers.
Mm-hmm.
So that the people he does feel closest to are the sex workers that he picks up.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder if his preference for trans sex workers, trans women sex workers, further isolates him, especially from his family.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, I don't think that's something his family would.
Oh, no, that's, appreciate. Like, specifically why the mother-in-law, like, tracks him down and freaks out.
Yeah. So there's, not only is he sort of transgressing
and why the other cab holiday. Driver was like, oh, he's into things you wouldn't like.
Yeah.
And it's very clear that it's not just, like, oh, he picks up sex workers. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, like, there's, like, queer, you know, like there's oh, it's another level.
So it's and it's interesting to me too that they could have made him, you know, a local from LA, but instead they made him an immigrant from an immigrant family, which seems to have that much more weight attached to his job performance and his ability. Like, they have a nice house. They have a big Christmas tree. They have a huge feast on the table. Mm-hmm. They are able to support, it seems like, many family members. Mm-hmm. And yet they
old ladies don't eat very much food, though.
But and yet they get kind of upset when he wants to go back to work. And he says, like, I gotta go make more money. But it's like they want his money, but they want him around, mm-hmm. at least to the appearance of him being around.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, his life seems kind of impossible. Which, and I mean, add on to that a language barrier and getting to know a city like LA, which is not an easy city to get around. Yeah, it's, which is all the more interesting to me that he seeks privacy and refuge in a car wash, especially since somebody is just thrown up inside his car, but he's washing the outside of his car.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, it's just very, it's very interesting to me.
I was also struck on this view how basically everyone in this movie is transient, and I think this movie would have done as well in our road movie, yes. segment as in this one.
Totally.
Because everyone's constantly on the move. There's, like, a clear, I mean, particularly Cindy and Alexandra have this clear, like, there and back again journey where they start at donut time and then sort of, like, things culminate back at donut time. Mm-hmm. But also, like, the cyclical nature of all of the work and how everyone is, like, constantly on the move but not actually going anywhere.
Yes.
So Alexandra and Cindy, like, walking this entire movie, mm-hmm. like, clear across LA, it feels like. so much walking. And yet they end right back where they started.
Yes.
And also, like, as they're going, they're sort of, like, circling back on themselves even within that, too. Mm-hmm. And again, cab driver, like, you know, just circling around the city, always picking up new people.
Who doesn't want to stay home.
Yeah. And who also can't, like, sort of be rooted.
Mm-hmm.
And even the cops who are sort of like there and playing out sort of the same scenario that they've played out a million times before. Like when they encounter Alexandra, they're like, oh yeah, here it is. Here we go again. You know, so there's that cyclical nature there, and that's very cynical, yeah. obviously. But yeah, just struck me this time how everyone isn't they're all trapped in their own little cycles, and how it looks different for everyone, but that sort of ends up in very similar places. With the exception of Cindy and Alexandra, who end up together.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Dinah and Razmik end up sitting alone, very isolated, in sort of their respective corners of LA.
Yeah. Now separated from any relationships they thought they had.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, and Alexandra and Cindy have just sort of found another late night fluorescent lighted place to seek refuge. it's not donut time, but it's the next best thing.
No tiny donuts.
No, but laundry.
And I feel like also there's a repeated refrain of people asking other people, like, are you new in town? Where are you from? That also sort of gets to this desire to break out of a cycle or to, like, broaden where they are,
yeah,
or acknowledge that there's something beyond but that they can't quite reach.
Well, even thinking about the idea that a lot of people who live in LA came from somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
like LA itself is a transient place.
Like, no one's from LA,
right? Like, people come and live there,
yeah,
but especially, like, they work in Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
so it's full of people coming to Hollywood with big dreams and then mm-hmm. either staying and being miserable or going back where they came from.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think the location there is very important.
Yeah, and I think I had previously read that as, like microaggressions, like racial microaggressions,
mm-hmm.
But it's sort of, like, spread across as indiscriminately, like it sort of almost doesn't matter who's saying it. Mm-hmm. Like one of the cab fares says it to Razmik, but then Razmik says it back to him, and turns out he's like a Cherokee indigenous man. Mm-hmm. And Razmik says, "Oh, I'm Armenian," and then like, and there's another exchange between the mother-in-law when she gets into the other cab, asking the cab driver where he's from, and he's like, "Oh, I'm Armenian." She's like, "Oh, good." It's another way of forming community and figuring mm-hmm. out connections and points of removal. But it is also a way of gauging proximity, right?
Yes. If both people are amenable. I think it's different if somebody is like...
What's it to
you? What are you?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. No, there are hostile ways of saying it, and mm-hmm. also...
But I think professions that involve a lot of transient people and people who don't respect your job as a job mm-hmm. Just tend to feel entitled to sort of explore your inner life without caring at all about it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yes, it is a way to find family and community, but it's also a way to be alienated from family and community.
It's also a way, just occurred to me, a way of safety checking.
Yep.
So yep. Particularly among transient communities, it's a way of being like, oh, like, where are you from? Like, you know, sort of being like, are you safe? Do I know something bad about you mm-hmm. or in connection with you? Like, before I get into your car, you know, sort of like the other side of it.
Yeah.
What, you know, what are the vibes, essentially, mm-hmm. before I engage further.
Yeah, which I think we see especially in the sex work community in the film. Like, mm-hmm. Razmik cares a bit less about that, I think. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, definitely, it's a huge part of the job is mm-hmm. knowing that you're, or doing your due diligence mm-hmm. To check up on your Johns.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about gift giving. You wanted to talk about gift giving.
Well, mostly I wanted to talk about Alexandra giving her wig to Cindy and okay. just how, yeah, it's more than just a gift. It's in no way a Christmas gift. It's just, mm-hmm. it's literally a piece from her body. Mm-hmm. Like she is, it's almost, I wanted to try to make a link there of giving Cindy like communion from her own body, but it's, I mean, it's such an intimate gift mm-hmm. that no words even need to be shared, right? It's a sacred gift. Mm-hmm. Which is in sort of opposition to, again, Razmik's sort of big American Christmas and how meaningless it is, mm-hmm. right? Like, he doesn't care about any of it. Meanwhile, we have these two women at a late night laundromat mm-hmm. washing puke off of or like urine off of one of them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's just this very selfless giving of oneself, mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, more in line with Christmas than, you know,
it is. Yeah. You know, the true meaning, reason for the season.
Yeah. Like, it's, yeah, it is a sacrifice, mm-hmm. right? And the fact that Alexandra sits there, you know, smiling at Cindy as Cindy's wearing her hair, and just sort of, there's one look she gives where it just, it's pure love and pure hope, mm. right? Like, it's just like, okay, we're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And it's just so affecting.
And the final line is... her telling Cindy that she looks great mm-hmm. in it.
Yeah.
And even, I think it's like, you look even better than I do in this or something like that.
Something like that. Like, so, some, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is also sort of indicating that Cindy is taking a part of Alexandra mm-hmm. into her as well. Like, she's maybe learning from her in some way or getting something from her that she hadn't mm-hmm. understood before. or knowing that she can always rely on Alexander even when they piss each other off. Because a good friend will help you clean up after someone throws pee on you.
That is the definition of friendship.
Yeah, yeah. I would help you.
Thank you. I would maybe help you. Okay. Depends on how rank the urine was.
I mean, I think stranger urine is always rank.
This is true. Yeah. No, I just meant if you had accidentally pissed yourself.
Oh, then I don't tend to do that.
Okay, well, good enough then.
Hmm. Odds are unlikely. You would be more likely to help me if I pissed myself, or you would be less?
No, likely. It depended on what you ate.
Oh, okay.
So if you had been like, I'm going to eat asparagus and then I'm going to piss myself just to spite you, just to test the bounds of friendship.
And then you must clean me up. I cannot do it on my own.
See, this is why it's important to state expectations beforehand.
It's true. We should write this out.
We should have a contract. Will not clean up intentional urine.
Only accidental.
Only accidental. Do you know why this movie's called Tangerine?
I mean, I thought a lot about this. Do you know?
I don't, but I did notice an instant of an actual tangerine in the movie.
Ooh, okay. Tell me.
It's the air freshener.
Yes.
That Alexandra buys for Razmik after the car wash scene. And she's like, dude, it's rank in here. Here mm-hmm. you go.
Okay, yes.
And then it's dangling off the car ever since.
That's right, and it is in the shape of a tangerine.
Yeah.
Which reminded me of the Christmas orange.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, okay, that's another nod to a Christmassy thing
mm-hmm.
that is sort of a, like, it's a, we all know it's a Christmassy thing,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the kind of thing we would want to receive as a gift necessarily. Like, the days of giving kids oranges for Christmas are over.
Are of yore.
So it's kind of, yeah, it strikes me that the tangerine, it is a gift that is necessary, but not one that is asked for.
Mmm. Oh, interesting. Yeah, it is. It's like an intangible, but like in this context, it's like another intangible thing, like sort of like a room freshener scent that combats the scent of vomit on your seats.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of becomes substantial, like it carries its own weight. I don't know, I feel like it becomes more significant just because it is unasked for, but then it sort of changes the atmosphere of the car itself.
Yeah, well, and I can imagine, I'm just purely imagining this now, but like those sort of synthetic smelling car fresheners, when combined with very bad smells like puke, just make everything smell that much worse. And so it is this sort of like goodwill gesture that is not asked for. But yeah, it doesn't necessarily make things better.
You're telling me that in a hot LA afternoon, in an old car, with fluids on the seats, a gas station air freshener wouldn't make things better.
Oh, one that smells like fruit, sort of.
Sort of. Adjacent.
I wouldn't want it in my car.
Hmm.
But I'm very particular about what my car smells like.
Yeah, you're or a fancy bitch.
Doesn't smell like.
Doesn't smell like. Yeah.
I'm a fancy bitch.
Yeah, I think it's another moment where Alexandra is extending grace to someone mm-hmm. who doesn't necessarily deserve it and or even want it. But she is just like, yeah, acting with care and intentionality, regardless of like whatever happens next.
Yeah, it's still incredibly thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it kind of does frame Alexandra as this sort of selfless mm-hmm. gift giver, even though, you know, she gives it to him because the car smells rank and she doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't have to do that.
But it also is a moment where she's like already getting out of the car.
Yeah, yeah,
she's
that's
not
true.
Going to be in the car any longer. Mm-hmm. So it is purely for him. Mm-hmm. It's not for her.
So is she the Santa Claus of this movie?
I think she might be.
I think so.
It's very possible. She's just giving gifts all over the place.
Yeah, and she's the one, like, she's singing, when she's at the bar singing, she's singing this Toyland song mm-hmm. that is sort of akin to a Christmassy, it's about toys. Mm-hmm. But, and she's in this banging red dress, mm-hmm. and it's just like, okay, she is the one who is sort of getting into some sort of contemplative or performative spirit of something, just in the song she sings, in the color she wears. I'm stretching it too far, but yeah, I think she is the one who kind of is able to be quiet and to, you know, reflect.
Yeah, I mean, I think I see her as someone who's creating ritual for themselves.
Yeah.
Aside from, like, whatever else is being sort of, like, forced upon her by culture or media, she's choosing the things that have, like, the most meaning and you know, like, give her the most joy, regardless of, you know, how they affect other people.
Yeah.
So sometimes that looks like giving gifts unasked, but just seeing a need.
Mm-hmm.
And other times it looks like her purchasing a venue to sing songs at, old-timey songs that other people are sort of baffled by.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the form of, you know, her, like, other people go to church for a Christmas Eve service, and that's, like, her moment of, you know, singing songs. And
yeah, and I agree, it's totally ritualistic, and it's almost, I mean, it feels almost spiritual in a way, because even though nobody's there, and it's, I mean, the bar owner is kind of grudgingly letting her sing, she does not let that affect her, like, mm-hmm. she just keeps going. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right that it is for her.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, who among us, like, I would be very tempted to just pack it in and like, mm-hmm. slink off into the into the night.
Yeah.
But she doesn't do that. Like, she shuts it down,
mm-hmm.
and holds her head high when leaving, even when Dinah's just making fun of
her. Being the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like a sacred moment, almost, mm-hmm. where she's, like, there for herself and just carrying herself with so much dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that is, you know, the essence of her whole life. Like, having chosen so many things that have then resulted in a life that is on the fringes,
mm-hmm.
of many things. This is, like, a way of bringing herself back to the center.
Mm-hmm. And, like, into the spotlight, literally.
Yeah.
Like,
she's making her own spotlight.
Yes. She mm-hmm. is drawing the focus on her,
mm-hmm.
in her own way.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ugh, love it. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we ready to move on to theme corner?
Sure.
All right. Very good. So we talked a little bit about how this is a Christmas movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any further thoughts you would like to add?
That this movie just kind of reminds us that Christmas isn't cozy and magical for everybody, and that some people it's just another work day. And I really appreciate mm-hmm. this movie for that. Because, I mean, part of that is highlighting marginalized groups mm-hmm. that don't have the luxury of taking Christmas off.
Yeah.
But yeah, just the idea that, yeah, people have to hustle on Christmas, and so much so that you kind of forget it's Christmas.
Yeah.
I
mean, it's still, like, everywhere. Like, people have, like, Santa hats, and there's, like, yeah. Christmas trees, but it also is just, like, but, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's also L.A., and people are walking around in shorts and flip-flops, and there's no, you know,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't look wintry, it doesn't,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's no overt Santa Claus, there's no mm-hmm. nativity scene, there's no, you know, there's nothing like that.
Yeah.
It could just be some weird people in LA wearing Santa hats.
This is true. And probably very likely the rest of the year.
Yep.
The mother-in-law at one point even says something about how, like, LA is a beautifully wrapped lie and mm-hmm. and how Christmas without snow is sort of this weird fake thing that you can't really, like, relax into. It's this strange deceit that everyone has agreed to participate in.
Which only someone who did not grow up in a place that doesn't have snow would say.
Yeah, totally.
To Angelinos, it's just a normal Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah, but she's like, this is a fake thing. This is very strange. This is very weird.
It's synthetic Christmas.
Yeah. I think I was just struck on this watch, like, again, how the people who are explicitly participating in Christmas are the worst.
Yeah.
And how, you know, the people who are, just another day going about their lives are the heroes. So, like, the dude who throws up in the car is like, it's Christmas, like, give us a break. And it's just like, you're the worst. Mm-hmm. You're an asshole, and you've just destroyed this dude's back seat. Mm. That's not a pass for you.
Yeah.
And same with the parsimonious John, who's like, oh, it's Christmas. I just need you to get me off. And then, like, just won't pay you because it's too much stress. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's Christmas. And then the cop who's like, oh, it's Christmas. I'll just let you go this once. Yeah. And it's like, oh, well.
Only consequences for the victim.
Yeah. Yeah. Per usual. Everyone who, like, names Christmas is doing it for some sort of garbage self-serving reason.
Yes. It's so true.
And then the people who are just like, oh, fuck, you know, gotta go about my day, like Alexandra, mm-hmm. are the ones that are much more, you know, like, inhabiting the spirit of Christmas. I had to say it, but I didn't like it.
We've both transgressed.
Oh, yeah. Let's do a Hanukkah theme next time or something. Yeah. Something very different.
Cool.
But yeah, how she is the one who is selflessly giving gifts, and she is the one who is creating meaning out of the small things available to her. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, a loveliness in that. Mm-hmm. And like, especially when contrasted with the sharp, like, awfulness of everyone else.
Yeah.
Who's just basically, like, using Christmas as an excuse to be shitty.
Yep. Yeah, totally. As people do.
As people do. Shall we move on to moments of joy?
Sure.
All right. What were your moments of joy? Very good.
Okay. I have two. So the first one, because we didn't get to it in the chat, I'm going to talk about it now.
Is we could have talked about it in the chat.
The car wash blowjob.
Okay.
Which is just, like, as you said, the car wash is an orifice.
Yeah.
It's a very sexual thing when you think about it. Because you have, like,
soap. It is very sexual. Everywhere. I did not clock it until this watch.
Like, soap is spurting.
It's,
and
like,
then,
you're,
like,
going into this warm, wet tunnel.
Yeah, you're rinsing off at the end. You're drying off. And then you're just going on your way. It is like a...
It's like a quick and dirty.
It is! But it's like a quick and clean. Because you're leaving.
Get out! Again? You didn't take the door last time? Leave.
But, yeah, so I think that's just a delightful metaphor, and
you'll never look at a car wash the same way again.
Never. Not one time. And my second moment of joy is when, Cindy, talking about drugs, says, bitch, you know I don't do downers, bitch. You know I'm an upper hoe. And, you know I'm an upper hoe is one of the best lines I've ever heard in my life. So, thoroughly enjoyed
she
that.
She is an upper hoe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So, Cindy is very quotable.
Very.
She has all the best lines. It's her world and we're just living in it. So, I mean, I had too many quotes to talk about, but I'll choose just a couple. One of them is, his breath always smells like he's been eating ass for days. And I love the extra for days. Really, like, just, like, turns the knife. And
yeah, it's not just a...
He hasn't just been eating ass. Not just he's little... been eating ass for days. Yeah. And that's what it smells like.
Long-term.
Long-term ass eating. And then when Cindy's dragging Dinah to donut time to confront Chester, she's like, time to make donuts, bitch!
Oh, yeah.
And I love that as a threat.
Totally. isn't that based on, like, an 80s commercial for, is it Dunkin'?
Oh, is it? Oh, time I didn't even know. Donuts? Okay.
Maybe.
All right. Got a fact remember. Check. Find it out.
I will.
Report back next time.
I'm too young to remember.
You were just a baby.
A wee baby.
A wee baby. And then actually my last one was Chester, who's the worst, but mm-hmm. also quite funny. When they're outside of donut time after getting kicked out, and Cindy has, like, shared that Alexandra's the one who told her about the shenanigans. Chester turns to Alexandra and is like, you get my ass thrown out of motherfucking donut time where I conduct my day-to-day shit? And it has just, like, just the delivery of it was just, like, so self-righteous. Just
incensed.
So, like, he's like, this is my office.
This is my place of business.
And the delivery and the line was just like, mwah, mwah, oh. mwah. So beautiful. Do you have movie connections? Anything you want to highlight? Anything you want to bring in dialogue with
this I mean, movie? This movie is so unlike any movie I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're right. There are very few movies that depict sex work in any sort of a dignified light, and even fewer that depict trans characters played by trans actors. Mm-hmm. My first thought was Pretty Woman, actually.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Just
sure.
Because of the way sex work is treated by sex workers and the different way it's treated by people who pay for sex work. Mm-hmm. As a sort of, like, poor you.
Yeah.
You're so marginalized, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, while
I'm giving you money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You shouldn't need to sell your body.
But now, do it anyway for me. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the sex workers just being like, actually, yeah. this is my job and I like it and it works for me. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, wow, that was pretty groundbreaking in a way. But it's also a depiction of LA sex work. But of course, without any of the layers that Tangerine brings in. Mm-hmm. So that's about as far as I got before I stopped thinking about it. But mm-hmm.
That makes sense. I was thinking, I mean, I wasn't, I often liked sort of like my mind branches in a thousand ways.
I know it does.
Had immediately connected this with Thelma and Louise.
Oh.
As an interesting counterpoint.
It is a buddy comedy.
It is a buddy comedy. It's a buddy journey movie. Mm-hmm. And it is about these very complex shifting dynamics between two women who, you know, one seems flightier, one seems more grounded, and then, you know, how they have often conflicting, but then compatible vulnerabilities and dominances, and yeah, just the ebbs and flows in that relationship.
Love that.
And then the marked difference in the ending. And sort of, yeah, like my beef with Thelma and Louise when we talked about it was like, okay, you're driving yourself off a cliff. Cool. Like, well, like, sure, like, okay, yeah. What's that doing for you? And and this movie sort of being the exact opposite, you know, like being literally pissed on and choosing a moment of connection instead.
Mm-hmm. Refuge.
Of being like, you know, let's drive off a cliff now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would really like to, you know, spend a little more time in my brain bringing those two movies into dialogue, because I think that'd be really interesting.
I agree.
There's a paper on that for sure. I'll let you have that.
No, by all means.
I'm not writing shit. And I was also thinking about this as in terms of like L.A. Noir and like gumshoe detective work, because the arc of this movie in another way could also be seen as like a mystery.
Yeah.
They are sort of absent all resource, absent even a phone to help them connect people. Mm-hmm. They're, yeah, like boots on the ground trying to find out what happened. And yeah, that is the thrust of this whole film.
Yeah, well, we could even go so far as to call Cindy, you know, Cindy is being a hard-boiled detective. Mm-hmm. We have femme fatale, mm-hmm, in Dinah. Mm-hmm. Or even in...
We've got the mobster in Chester. We've got
the mobster. We've got the decline in morality. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is this movie a noir?
This is actually a noir.
I mean, yeah.
Humphrey Bogart, hold on to your pants. We're coming for you.
I feel comfortable.
Yeah. So I also love looking at it in that way.
That's great.
No specific ones, obviously, but just, like, the genre as a whole. And seeing the structure of the hard-boiled detective,
mm-hmm,
as like literally something present here.
The pavement.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
In summation, what did we learn? And juiciest bits, juiciest butts. I feel like there weren't that many juicy butts in this movie.
No, although like...
Where's the pity?
Cindy has a nice butt.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, both lead women have very nice butts.
Mm-hmm.
And wear clothes that really like...
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Show it off.
Dinah has no butt whatsoever. Poor white girl.
No, she has lower back that goes into her legs.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah, that's all it is. What did I learn? I had a really good answer for this and now I can't remember.
Oh no. Shoot.
I learned that Cindy is an upper hoe.
She is an upper hoe.
Important knowledge.
Cindy is great. I feel like we didn't talk enough about how funny and wonderful, mm-hmm, Cindy is. And how her full name is Cinderella.
That's right. That's right.
So that's also points in her favor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Alexandra just like mentions off the cuff. And we're like, wait,
yes.
Oh, we want to know more.
I learned that I also don't want to work at donut time.
Oh no. What did I learn? I learned, you know what? This is going to be controversial at the end of our Christmas segment.
Mm.
But I learned you don't need Christmas.
Yeah.
As long as you've got good friends.
That's basically what they say in It's a Wonderful Life, isn't it?
It's true. Also, you better save up for a divorce in case you ever get a husband.
That's right.
That's actually the true moral of the story of It's a Wonderful Life.
A divorce.
Yeah. Anything else before we close off? We put our Christmases to bed. We turn off the lights. We leave a bowl of milk and cookies for
whoever.
I guess we're closing.
Whoever
wait,
wants to
wait, I don't know how this metaphor is actually extending, so yeah. I'll stop now.
Yeah, happy holidays, everybody. Be thankful for your friends.
Be thankful for your friends. Hold them close.
And everything will be okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been Charlie.
I've been Mandy.
Goodbye.
Bye.